Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, Mets fans. Welcome back to Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. We had promised at the end of it last episode we were back regularly, almost weekly, and that's been almost a month ago. So we're sorry that it has been taking a while for us to get back to it. But this time, we promise we're getting into the best shape of our lives to bring Mets podcast to you each and every week as part of Home Run Applesauce and Fans First Sports Network. But in our defense, since we last recorded, only one really noteworthy thing has happened, and that is the unfortunate reality of Kodai Senga getting hurt and guaranteeing that he will miss at least the first month of the season rehabbing his injury. So it is a shoulder injury, which not great typically for pitchers. He received a PRP injection in that shoulder just a couple days ago now. What was that? The 25th of February, about a week ago. And shut down for 3 weeks, and then after that there will be a 6-week training program to get him ready for the season if he is indeed ready to go at the end of those 3 weeks. Now, Chris, you and I spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about how the Mets did not have a wealth of starting pitching this year, how Senga was pretty much the first, best, and really only option as a frontline starting pitcher that the Mets had in their under contract already. And so with him missing at least the first month of the season, more than likely, where does that put you in terms of your feelings about them going out and signing one of the still available starting pitchers on the market?
Oh, I'd really love to see them do it. And I don't think it's just because of the injury, but Jordy Montgomery was sort of on the radar for me going back to sometime in the middle of last season, especially once the Mets had really fallen out of the playoff race themselves. Just somebody who has consistently improved, especially over the last 3 or 4 seasons. I know he's got an asking price that some people might find too high, whether it's in terms of the dollars or the number of years, but he just seemed like a pitcher who had sort of established himself as durable. Still improving, maybe, just because if you break his last few years up into whether it's been the different teams he's been on or just kind of look at it as half a season at a time, the general trend here has been that he's gotten better and better and better. Obviously with pitchers, durability is never guaranteed and it could always change with one injury and never come back. But the best indicator that we have that somebody is durable is that they've been durable. So I like him a lot. I think he made sense for the Mets coming into the off season. And he still does now. And the reason that I would still be very much in favor of it is because all of that was the case before. With Senga getting hurt, sure, it makes it even more appealing to, you know, to go and do that. But even if Senga comes back as quickly as he can, and this is the blip and not a longer term injury, the Mets still have rotation needs beyond this year. So Blake Snell being out there is equally enticing in a way, because I mean, look, he just won a Cy Young Award last year. When he's good, he's very, very good. He's been a bit, you know, a little bit less consistent over the last several years. But obviously either one of those guys would make the rotation a lot better. And when you look at what the Mets have, even if everything goes well with Quintana, Severino, Hauser and Minaya, okay, you know, but maybe that happens. Maybe that does pan out the way they kind of envisioned it as they built this rotation. But there's still going to be a need for innings. And I don't know. We're in, what, the third or fourth year of, is Tyler McGill going to stick? Is he going to turn the corner? That kind of a thing. I mean, it was a great story that he came up and filled in respectably when he made the jump kind of out of nowhere to the majors a few years back. But yeah, without an addition, we're going to be seeing a good amount of McGill, Lucchese, and maybe eventually someone the likes of Christian Scott or you know, another one of the pitching prospects, or Jose Buto, who you know, fared decently when he got his major league shot last year for a little bit of time. So yeah, I think the rotation is the biggest concern for me. I know some people have a big concern about the team's lineup, but I can kind of see the lineup in the bullpen being good, or good enough for the team to be in that wild card mix. But I have rotation concerns, and I lean more toward Montgomery, you know, for the reasons I've already stated. But going and signing one of Montgomery or Snell could really help this year and would give them a whole lot less uncertainty about the rotation over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And like with any free agent contract, I'm not so concerned about what Steve Cohen's going to be paying either one of those guys in the final 1, 2, or 3 years of their deals.
Right.
I think Steve Cohen is too concerned about what he might pay Justin Verlander next year.
Right.
And it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
To us, that's a lot of money. To him, not so much.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's a weird situation with these two starting pitchers of Snell and Montgomery. You know, are they both repped by Scott Boras? I know Montgomery is. I think Snell is also.
I have no idea.
Blake Snell, agent. Scott Boras, yep. Boras always makes things more complicated than they need to be. That's not me shitting on Boras. I think he does a good job for his clients, and that's important. But as a fan who has had to overpay for Boras clients or lost out on Boras clients because Boras is just who he is, he's a frustrating figure sometimes as a baseball fan. But, you know, Snell obviously has the hardware. He has two Cy Young Awards. You know, his best season was undoubtedly 2018 when he had an ERA plus of 217, having thrown 180 innings. You know, it's rare that – it's actually strange. Both of his best seasons, he threw 180 innings. And those are the most he's ever thrown professionally. So, you know, Snell is a guy who seems to – when he's healthy, he pitches the best because he's pitching the most innings. You know, and obviously those are gaudy numbers to look at. But I think if I had to choose, I think I'm with you in terms of Montgomery. I just think Montgomery has been a more consistent pitcher. I think aesthetically, I would rather watch Montgomery than watch Snell. Snell just is not my style of starting pitcher to watch, which is fine. That is low on my list of reasons why the Mets shouldn't sign somebody, because I don't want to, you know, I'm not a huge fan of watching them pitch every 5 days. But I just think that Snell has been less consistent than I would like for a guy who's going to get the amount of money he's going to get. Again, not my money. That's not my point. I just mean you're investing that much in a player. You want to make sure the player is going to do the stuff you want them to do for the amount of money you're giving them. And so I think Montgomery is going to both take less money and less years and is probably more of the type of pitcher I would like to see the Mets go after. So I'm with you on that. I don't get the sense that the Mets are chomping at the bit to sign either of these guys. And I guess that's the question I want to ask you, is just like, not based on anything that they've done in the past. What is your general vibe about this? Do you think they're going to do this? Do you feel, I don't feel like they feel, I don't think that they're projecting desperation with this. Whereas there have definitely been times, like for instance, the very, very dark Trevor Bauer era, where I feel like the Mets look desperate to make a signing. I don't get that vibe at all from them right now. And I don't know if that means that they're not serious about it, or if that means that they're just doing a better job with their poker face this time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if I had to guess, I don't think they'll sign anybody. And I know this might sound contradictory to what I said a few minutes ago, but it's more frustrating to me that they're just completely not doing anything on the JD Martinez front when he's still out there.
Yes, that is my big problem as well.
Yeah, yeah, because that is somebody who took a one-year deal last year, still produced. He's of an age that he'll probably have to take another one-year deal. And at that point, that truly is playing with house money. If you get him and he's great, he might help push you into the playoffs and really lengthen the middle of the order. And if he's good and you are bad, you should be able to trade him no problem in July. But on the pitching front, it's still frustrating that it seems like they won't do anything. But my best guess is that they just won't. I don't know. I still don't love that idea. I don't think either of the two pitchers that we're talking about is going to get to a point that they sign a 1 or 2 year deal.
Boris just came out yesterday and said that Montgomery would sign a short-term deal.
Okay. Well,
now, again, my definition of short-term and Boris's might be different.
Right. But yeah, it's, and I think you get into this interesting area where, players who have been in this spot, and I fully support the player and the agent, whomever the agent is, trying to get top dollar. For some of these guys, the fact that they've even hit free agency at all is a major accomplishment. Most players don't make it to the big leagues or last long enough to get to free agency. I don't begrudge anybody trying to get paid for putting in all the work that they have and being in that situation. But at some point, the players have to look at the guys who came before them and were in this spot and didn't get a full spring training and didn't have a great season. Or,
yeah, we talked about this last time, I think, right?
Right.
Who was the player we were talking about specifically?
I remember it most with what Stephen Drew, right? But there have been a few. There was a pitcher too who I just can't remember off the top of my head. And look, Stephen Drew wasn't Mike Trout at the time of
sure,
all of that.
Sure, yeah.
But it was just a situation where it kind of dragged out, and he didn't have a team. And by the time he got up to speed, he really was never, I don't know, never the same player again. Maybe it wasn't quite as much of a drop off as I'm making it out to be, but there's got to be something in the back of the mind of a player saying, "Hey, I want to play a full season."
Especially like if it gets to the point where you're taking a pillow contract or a short term deal to hopefully try this again, you have to make sure that this year is a good year. So if you're willing to say, okay, I'm going to take a 1 year deal to rebuild my value and then try again next offseason, if you come out of the chute and you're shitty for the first 6 weeks of the year, people are going to remember that when it comes to signing you for next season. So all the incentive is on them to actually play. In terms, you know, so I totally get that too. I really wonder if the Mets are just trying to wait for the prices to come down, because we already felt, and by we, I don't just mean you and I mean that I think collectively the fan base felt like they needed another starting pitcher the whole offseason. We kept saying that thing. And so the fact that there's still two out there and no one is really beating their doors down, it seems to me like this is the perfect opportunity for the Mets. They're going to get a shorter, cheaper deal than they would have gotten at the start of spring, at the end of the offseason, right? So every day that goes on, you think there has to be a little bit of a discount coming in, whether it's discount in years or in dollars. And even if not, with Senga out with a shoulder injury, I mean, he is their plan for 2024 in terms of pitching. You know, they have put together a decent rotation behind him, but you really would feel a lot better with one other frontline starting pitcher. And I'm not saying an ace, I'm saying frontline. To me, there's a difference there. I don't think that Snell or Montgomery is necessarily an ace, but Snell and Montgomery are certainly better gambles this season than anybody not named Senga on the Mets. And that includes Quintana, who you'd think would be the person behind Senga in terms of the pitching depth chart. And the JD Martinez thing really makes no sense to me. But yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And we're not, either of us, sitting here worrying about the Mets' luxury tax situation and everything. But I could understand if they were under a specific threshold right now, and we're using only that as a justification for not getting JD Martinez for a year. But I don't believe that's the case. I don't think they're specifically getting a lower luxury tax rate at the moment because they're at a certain number, right? I think because of the way they, and we fully supported it, but the way that they handled trading Scherzer and Verlander and retaining a huge commitment to them financially to get really good prospects back, they're going to be paying luxury tax. So
yeah,
but you know, my mindset is basically, one, I don't care if they have to at all, but two, if you are, then, you know, go for it. And 1 year deals just are never a bad thing.
No. If you could get Martinez on a 1 year deal and Snell and Montgomery on even a 2 or 3 year deal, although I think it's going to be 1 year deal or 5 or more. I think that's kind of how it's going to work at this point. But if you can get them all, you know, one or two of those three players on short term deals, yeah, you take that every time. I don't know. It's just, what's the harm?
Yeah,
it's not like there. I could also understand if the pitching situation was more resembling the offensive situation in the high minors, where if they felt like, listen, we have 2 or 3 stud prospects who are going to be ready at some point this year. We just want to give them a little bit of seasoning time in AAA. So we're not going to bring in a free agent because we know that by June 1st, we're going to have insert pitcher here in our rotation. I could understand that a little bit more too, but that is not the case. There is no surefire stud starting pitcher in the upper minors right now, and certainly not somebody who is projected to be on the team and contributing in a meaningful way in the first half of the season. So it's frustrating, and you know, there's really nothing we can do about this as a fan base, because my one critique of David Stearns so far as a GM, which is a critique of 99% of the executives in sports. I am not necessarily singling out just this guy, but it seems like he has this sort of attitude with the press where it's, I know what I'm doing. You guys don't know what I'm doing, and I'm not going to tell you. You just have to kind of believe me. Do you get a similar vibe from him?
Yeah, I could see that. Or, yeah. It's been several years now. Longtime readers of Amazing Avenue will probably recall that I went to spring training a whole bunch of times, and you and I went in the same year once, right before the world shut down.
we're talking that whole trip about how we're doing this again next year, and here we are.
Yeah, but. So having not interacted with him directly in any kind of way, even in observation in real life, just, you know, I don't know how that feels there. And I think he does a good job of being sort of professional about it, but it's a very guarded sort of approach to all of this. And I don't know, I guess that comes with the job and everything, but yeah, I can see where you're coming from there.
I was got the impression with Sandy Alderson, if you listen to Sandy talk enough, you kind of got an idea of what he wanted to do, even if he wasn't trying to tell you outright. Like, he just, I don't know. I just feel like maybe the word I'm looking for is media trained. Maybe Stearns is just better media trained than what we're used to. Although we had fucking Brody Van Wagenen, who was as media trained as anyone in the history of mankind. Who one time asked me and Chris if a conversation was off the record when we talked about nothing that could possibly be considered salacious. Do you remember that?
I do.
Was it Stephen Matz's charity fundraiser?
Yeah.
A bowling fundraiser?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been to Stephen Matz and Nelson Figueroa Manhattan bowling events.
Yes, yes. It's been too long. Let's say that.
Yeah.
If any Mets out there are doing a charity bowling event they'd like Chris and I to show up at, we're happy to do so. Although for Chris now, it's a much more difficult commute to come down to those fundraisers. But yeah.
That is true. But hey, if Francisco Lindor wants to go bowling, I can make the trip happen.
Yeah, we'll, for Francisco, we'll make it work for sure. All right, let's turn our attention a little bit more directly towards Senga here for a second. How worried are you about Senga's injury? They haven't told us anything that seems particularly troubling or particularly like this is not a big deal yet. It's very much a wait and see situation. But how worried are you about Senga's 2024 season?
Moderately worried. I know they said it's the better capsule injury, but I don't know if I feel so strongly that there's a good one there.
Right. Yeah.
That there's a. If you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, there's an episode where Larry is asking about the good and bad kinds of a much more serious medical situation.
Yes, yes.
Because you know he's Larry David. But yeah, let me get out of Larry David mode for a second here and just say I do have some concerns. The shoulder isn't what you want to hear. I mean, elbow isn't either. But elbow, we at least are very, very used to, not just as Mets fans, every team, every fan base right. has had Tommy John surgeries, generally successful recoveries from them. In some instances where that doesn't end up really happening. Former Met Noah Syndergaard would be a pretty good example of that. And even Matt Harvey, although I don't know that what was going on with his elbow really had anything to do with the injury that actually derailed his career. But
right.
All of that aside, shoulder stuff can sound pretty dicey. And I think what will really tell us whether or not it's something to worry about for the rest of this year or the rest of his contract is, you know, does he finish up his, they give him a 3-week shutdown from throwing. Does he actually get out on the field and start throwing and progress through a 6-week spring training regimen without any setbacks or discomfort or whatever you want to call it and get out there and start pitching major league games for the Mets in May, right? That, I think that's about the timeline for.
And that's the most optimistic timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, the best case scenario. So if he goes through all that and that happens, I will try to stick to my mantra of not reacting to news until it happens. But if there are setbacks, especially if if he tries and they shut him down again for a while and then he tries and he makes it further and they shut him down again for a while, that's when I start to get to worrying about this year and beyond, honestly.
Right.
But right now I will try to be relatively optimistic and say that nothing's happened yet that would doom his season or his career. And selfishly, maybe they'll have him pitch a game at a minor league affiliate in upstate New York between today and whenever he, pitches for the Major League Mets, but yeah, I'll stick with my original moderately concerned. I hope 5 to 6 weeks from today that we are just, I don't know, not even thinking about it.
Right.
That he's
right
out there. That said, it'll be a thing that gets brought up constantly, just like, and I can save my pro Pete Alonso rant for another episode as we get into opening day mode soon. But I want to enjoy what these guys do. I don't want every Pete Alonso home run to be intertwined with a reminder that he's a free agent at the end of the season.
Right.
And I was saying, if he goes out there and proves that he's healthy, he's not in discomfort, and he's making regular starts, I don't want to keep talking about the shoulder or hearing about it, really, from people asking questions or other fans during and after each of his starts. This is not somebody who has a track record of being injured frequently. And I would like to think that if he does prove to be healthy, that we can just move on until something maybe arises again sometime down the road.
It would be lovely to be able to move on from something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Not have it constantly be a dwelling point for everybody.
Oh yeah. It would.
I'm in about the same state you are in terms of your worry about his injury. You know, it's never going to feel great until he's back out there throwing and looking fine. Capsule injuries are scary. Shoulder injuries are scary. You know, you mentioned sort of the known quantity of an elbow injury. The way I don't know who said it to me. Someone said it to me years ago, which was that an elbow injury is frustrating because you know how long it takes to recover from. A shoulder injury is scary because you never quite know what it means. Like if someone needs Tommy John surgery, you know what that means. You know you're going to miss them for a year and they're going to come back hopefully where they were. With a shoulder injury, it could be they're on the sideline for a month or two, or it could be their career is never the same. It's just such a there are so many outcomes that can come from a shoulder injury. And so that's how I feel about the injury in general. Specifically, I am glad that they seem like they are using caution with all of this. They didn't have him keep throwing. They're being very cautious, and hopefully they caught this early in whatever that means in this context. And, you know, they can figure out a plan. What's frustrating, to tie in our first conversation here, is because of the uncertainty around him and because of the availability of decent free agents, the fact they haven't done anything, just it's very hard to track this action with the Mets that we saw Steve Cohen operate last year, where, you know, he was going after the best players available, sort of damn the torpedoes, damn the luxury tax, and now there is a need and they're not really going after the players they need. And, you know, I think we could all understand why that could be frustrating. Anyway, we're going to save Pete Alonso talk for later. A couple of real quick news items since we last podcasted. Luke Voit is back on a minor league deal. Any thoughts about that?
Hey, fine with me. I know people kind of freaked out about it a little bit the first time the Mets signed him to a minor league deal. I wasn't really sure why. We've spoken our piece about wanting a more everyday DH. Whether the current solution ends up being DJ Stewart or G-Man Choi, or a mix of those two and Mark Vientos or whatever. Voit is obviously willing to start the year in Syracuse. I don't think there's any, aside from a multiple injury sort of situation to several players, I don't think there's a path for him to make the opening day roster. He probably knew that at the time that he signed the deal. Not somebody who I would expect to get back to what he was doing when he broke out with the Yankees, but there are worse things than having him around in Syracuse and calling him up in a pinch. So fine with me.
Yeah. Same situation as you feel. The disadvantage he has is that he has reverse platoon splits. So he is not a good partner for G-Man Choi in terms of splitting time. If DJ Stewart needs to play more outfield, or if DJ Stewart proves to be one of those, you know, classic 1 month wonder stories that never achieve that same level of success. Or if Vientos, you know, doesn't do what people think he can maybe do. So yeah, that's the Voit situation. Next up, Max Kranick has a hamstring strain. He's out of options. So he was going to either make the team or not. This lets him at least start the season on a rehab assignment, which I guess is maybe beneficial for the Mets. Gives him a little time to see what Kranich can do before deciding that or not. But I don't have any particular Max Kranich thoughts. He's a weird signing in that he's never really... I think he has less than 50 big league innings. What's up? 43.2 big league innings so far. But he was still being talked about as a potential rotation piece, mainly because of him being out of options. So does this spike the needle at all for you, or is this just a typical spring training churn story?
Yeah, I think typical spring training thing. I will admit that even though I might have even written a quick thing saying that the Mets claimed him on waivers, but when they did, but when the injury came up, I didn't remember who he was. or maybe like a day or two before the injury, somebody mentioned him as being in the mix for a rotation spot, and whatever the case. Early in spring training, his name was not one that had registered with me. And when you look back at his career, and it's got to be frustrating for him, injuries have been really the big story. He just hasn't thrown that many innings, especially in recent years. So it's got to be frustrating. He's not old, even by baseball standards. So there's certainly an opportunity there for him to have a healthier stretch and maybe show who he is as a pitcher at the upper levels of the minors or in the big leagues. But given the injury track record, not shocking. And since he hasn't made that impression in general yet, it's pretty easy as a Mets fan to just kind of, all right, whatever. Yeah, you kind of figure that McGill or Lucchese is going to get that spot anyway.
Right, yeah.
He's wearing a Mets uniform this year. I'm certainly not rooting against him. But yeah, just didn't have a huge impact on me.
Yep, same.
In the moment.
Mets claimed left-handed relief pitcher Colton Ingram off of waivers from the Tigers. He was added to the 40-man. I believe he has options, but I'm not positive. This seems like a flyer. No more, no less. Any big Ingram thoughts?
Not really. I just looking at stats, which is all we can do for somebody like this. What he did in the minors last year as a reliever was good. Yeah, lots of strikeouts, more walks than you'd like to see, but nothing too crazy. And he's got an 8.44 ERA in the big leagues, but that's in six innings,
right? Yeah.
So nothing that you can conclude anything from. I'd say he's above average in terms of how intriguing he is among these types of additions the Mets have made this offseason. I know some people are maybe a little bit more optimistic about a couple of the guys in the mix for those like 6, 7, 8 spots in the bullpen. But yeah, I feel like with relievers, it's always the case. Yeah. If the strikeouts are there, can you make the walk rate palatable and end up being a useful major league pitcher? So we'll see. But fully support claiming somebody on waivers for free. And he has options remaining per Fangraphs. So if he doesn't make the opening day roster, he'll be in Syracuse. And if he were to do simply what he did in the Angels system in Double and Triple A last year, if he were to just keep doing that at Triple A, to start this year in Syracuse, I'd have to think that he would get a call up at some point in the first half of this season.
I would think the same, yeah.
And, he's left-handed, but I wrote about Jake Diekman a little bit yesterday, and I think being a potential third lefty in the bullpen wouldn't necessarily work against Ingram because Brooks Raley and Jake Diekman don't really have platoon splits.
Right. They're good crossover pitchers.
I'm not diving deep enough to know if Ingram has any in the minors, but if he is a lefty who, like a lot of lefties, is better against same-handed hitters than not, it wouldn't make him redundant with those guys. So sure,
right. He could be the traditional loogie out of the bullpen. Although now it's different because of the three out rule, but he could be the traditional.
How do you say lefty three out guy? I feel like that's a license plate. Like somebody else got loogie. So I'm L-O-3-O-G-Y or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but yeah, he could be that traditional lefty to come in to get lefties out while the other two are crossover pitchers. So yeah. Anyway, that's the news. I do want to maybe spend some time next week talking about the bullpen. And
I'm game.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why I want to talk about it, because you're Mr. Bullpen this offseason. So we can talk about sort of maybe next week we each make a bullpen to start the season with. How's that sound?
Sure. Yeah.
Look at us teasing a future episode like professional podcasters do.
Yeah. Edwin Diaz, Binghamton Rumble Pony. I won't do that.
No, please don't. But until then, what is your music pick for this week, Chris?
So oftentimes my album recommendations are tied into recent live music experiences. And that's the case again with this one. I had never seen Godspeed You, Black Emperor live to the best of my recollection until very recently. Got the opportunity to do so. And they were a band that I had been into the album that I'm about to recommend back in college. And nothing ever happened where I was like, oh, I dislike this band now or whatever. Just they'd kind of fallen off my radar. I'll admit, I didn't even realize that they had continued making music as much as they have in the 15-ish years since the last time I was more keenly aware of them, but they have. And I think it's pretty different in terms of, I mean, I've recommended other genres of music, but if you want to call it rock, I think it's very different from a lot of the music I've recommended in the past on this show. So the album is called Lift Your Skinny Fists Like Antennas to Heaven. And it's the one that always stuck out. They had a couple records out in our college years. But this was the one that I think I had heard the most back then. When I saw that they were playing in my neck of the woods, I was pretty excited to go see them and see what they were like live. And this album in particular, I don't think they played anything off of it at the show that I saw, but the average runtime of a single track on this record is 21 minutes.
And that is brought down by one track being just under 19 minutes.
Yeah. But it's big. It's there's a lot going on. There's a lot of layers to it. It's not something I would listen to all the time, but if I feel like they're probably not quite as well known as Sigur Rós, right?
I would say so. Yeah.
So
they were definitely a band that people knew because of the name, because it was this long, right, gangly name that people would sort of make fun of because the name was so long, versus Sigur Rós had just a more common name, I guess.
Right, right. But sort of orchestral in a way. I mean, Sigur Rós has literally toured with an orchestra recently. But Godspeed You, Black Emperor, this album and the band in general, that there's just a lot of sound happening. And my very quick description of it was, if you took like the droney part of the metal band, the Japanese metal band Boris, like if you took their drone and Sigur Rós and met somewhere in between that, I think that's where you get these guys.
That's an excellent description.
So, yeah. If any of that sounds familiar to you and you don't know this record, go check it out. And if you know nothing about any of it, I still recommend checking it out. And I'm glad to have kind of reconnected on a, you know, personal level with this band's music. So, yeah, go ahead. It's cool. Album art too. It's like easy to pick out, you know, I'm it, like, I'm not opposed to like black and white fuzzy album covers, which is like a lot of what they have, but it's the one with the red circle in the hands on, or red circles in the hands on it.
Yeah.
Kind of stands out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Record brings me back to college for sure. So, yeah. So my pick this week is also inspired by a recent live show. On Friday, I went to the legendary Rockland County, New York music venue, The Turning Point, Piermont, a folk club that's been there for many, many years, where I played a very ill-advised open mic at the age of 14 or 15 with a friend of mine. So much of this, one of the other performers pulled us aside afterwards and was like, you guys should really like clean up your act before you come back here. So that's how bad we were. We didn't know any better. But it's a tiny venue, like 60 seats tops. And one of my favorite songwriters, Mike Viola, was playing there. And I've recommended Viola's most recent record. He has a new one coming out later this year, which I'm sure I will recommend later this year. But he played a bunch of songs from his record, the American Egypt, which came out in 2018. And I do not own a physical copy of this record. I was hoping he was going to have physical copies there to buy, but he didn't. But I believe he recorded the entire thing himself, like playing all the instruments and recording it in his home. He's an amazing producer and songwriter and musician. And seeing him live and up close, I mean, I was literally in the front row of this tiny venue. And it was a mesmerizing show. He's a great guitar player, told great stories, was funny, was just everything you want out of a solo acoustic show. He delivered, and it was great. But the songs from the American Egypt really stuck with me. I had heard the record before, but for some reason, hearing those songs live were really just, they very much spoke to me. And his songwriting is it reminds me in a way of people like Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne, in that he can write very different songs based on sort of the audience he's writing for. For anyone who's seen Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, he wrote some of the music for that. He is the vocalist and arranger on the song That Thing You Do from the film That Thing You Do. He's produced records for people like Panic at the Disco and Mandy Moore, but also has done like super indie stuff. So he's sort of a chameleon in the way that he makes music. But when he's putting stuff out under his own name, I just think he's a very, very clever, really talented songwriter. And on the American Egypt, I love specifically the guitar and drum tones he gets out of it. It's just, it's really interesting. And I think the songs are oftentimes funny, which is hard to do in music. Like, not, you know, I'm not saying Weird Al funny, but I'm saying there are little moments in them that make you chuckle. And I always appreciate that, but it's very hard to do and to not feel like you're being obnoxious while doing it. And his stuff always feels pretty natural and pretty honest at times, because he tends to be making fun of himself a lot of times. It's very self-deprecating. He has a song on this record called Mutant Ninja Turtle, which is about how he was wearing a pair of black skinny jeans. He was trying to look cool, and he had a backpack on, and someone said he looked like a Ninja Turtle with the skinny jeans in the backpack. Like, that's funny. That's objectively funny. And, you know, he has a song called I Forgive You, Fuckface, which is funny as well. But overall, the record is really, really well made, really well produced. I love his songs. I love the way he plays guitar. And yeah, just a fantastic songwriter. If you ever got the chance to see Mike Viola live, you should do that. And yeah, check out The American Egypt, which is my music pick for this week. So thank you for listening. We will be back next week, barring some sort of personal catastrophe, with another episode. Go to homerunapplesauce.com for information about our Patreon and to find out more. And we will talk to you soon. So until then, let's go Mets.